Welcome to The Jones Zone, a podcast by Daryl and JJ Jones, your resource for building wealth and knowledge in everything real estate. Your host, Daryl Jones, a top Orange County real estate agent, has been supporting homeowners for over 30 years. He is here to share his tips and advice, as well as insights from industry experts, to help you take your real estate game to the next level. Now, here's your host, Daryl Jones.
Hello, and welcome to the Jones Zone. Today, we'll explore what assisted senior living is and the basics of this important topic. As our loved ones age, many of us are faced with difficult decisions about their arrangements and care needs. Assisted senior living can be a great option for older adults who need some help with daily activities, but still want to maintain their independence and social connections. In this episode, we will explore the different types of assisted living facilities, the services and amenities they offer, and what to consider when choosing a community for your loved one. Join me as I delve into the world of assisted senior living with our guest senior living consultant, Ronnie Murdoch. Welcome to the show, Ronnie. Please tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Thanks for having me, Daryl. My name is Ronnie Murdoch. I'm a gerontologist, which means I have a master's degree in gerontology, which is the study of aging. It's basically a social work degree as it relates to seniors only. And I help families navigate the complexities of the senior care industry and sort of geriatric case management and manage their case depending on where they're at in their process. Some people are just wanting to learn more about what assisted living is, and others are in an emergency situation where we're finding placement within a couple days. Just depends on the day and time.
And then, you know what, do you only elderly, or do you work with, for example, car accidents and people that have been in situations like that?
On the occasion, that comes up, but for the most part, I work with people. In order to move into an assisted living, you have to be at least 62 years old. Okay. So I usually work with people over the age of 60-ish.
So what's the difference between assisted living and home care?
Good question. They're very different. Assisted living is a place that you go to get care, and home care would be bringing a caregiver into your house. And the biggest difference is really, honestly, the cost. The cost of bringing a private caregiver into your house is very expensive, about $35 to $40 an hour these days. So for 24-hour care, that calculates out to about $25,000 to $30,000 a month. So most people can't afford that long term. So often we bring private caregivers in if it's a short term situation or they don't need 24-hour care. The senior doesn't. Murphy's Law, though, of a private caregiver is that as soon as the caregiver leaves is when the accident happens or the care need occurs, a fall or, you know, the need to go to the bathroom or shower or something like that. So caregivers at home are really only appropriate if we're on a short-term basis or the family has tons of money to spend on private caregivers or there's family support as well. Whereas assisted living is a place you move to. You have your own studio apartment. The best way to describe it is it's a cruise ship on land, basically.
Oh, wow.
So you can...
Can I get there when you're younger than 60?
I wish, right? You can go on a cruise when you're younger than 60. See if you like it. So you have your own apartment. You have a button you push when you need care. And that's just much more cost effective. You go down to a dining room for meals and you go to... activities, bingo, exercise, they have buses that take them to doctor's appointments, et cetera. So it caters to a person that can have some level of independence in that they know when they need care and they can push a button for care, but can't live at home or can't afford to live at home or the home has stairs or something that is not conducive to taking care of the senior at home.
That makes sense. My aunt actually had a fall a few months ago, and she actually had a life alert button on. But you know what? She forgot she had the life alert.
She was
on the ground for 8 hours.
Oh, no. Yeah, we hear that story happen frequently. Usually they just don't wear their life alert because they don't want to. But so she had it on and didn't push it.
It's a slightly flawed system. You do have to remember you have it.
Yeah, shoot.
Well, that's a bummer. Hey, so what's the average age of these residents in these senior living communities?
We do find mostly these days that seniors don't move to assisted living until they do have a care need or a spouse has a care need that they need help with. So the average age is in the late 80s, probably, I would say.
Wow. I heard I think I read somewhere that oddly enough, counterintuitively, that oftentimes the caregiver passes before the person that's being cared for. Is that
Very frequent. Yeah. Wow. That's specifically the case with dementia care. So if you're the spouse taking care of the person with dementia, you often let your own care needs go and you end up, I have a client right now that's, you know, in the hospital with sepsis, with a UTI, a urinary tract infection that turned to sepsis. And it's just because she was so busy taking care of her husband with dementia.
So counterintuitive.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah. You have to take care of yourself. So and why is the location accessibility important? Tell our listeners why that's so important.
That is kind of dependent family to family on what's important. I have, you know, I know you do a lot of work in Brea. I live in Brea too. And we have a lot of people that just say, I'm a Brean, I'm staying in Brea and I have to stay in this area. And the same is true for a lot of other cities. But mostly I encourage my clients to go near to their family, wherever their family is. And so if you, you know, love North Orange County or Orange County, but you have family that lives in Tennessee and you don't have anybody here, you probably should choose your assisted living close to where your family is and make that move when you can, as soon as you can. And when you are able to be a part of that decision-making process. So the location is important. That's something that we often consider, but usually in relation to how close their family is. Because as a senior ages, they need somebody to advocate for them. And as a family member, you want to be able to make short and frequent visits to the assisted living. And so if you have to drive an hour or take a flight to where mom is, just by the nature of the way the industry works, mom probably won't get as good a care as the daughter that's there every single day at different times of the day for 10 or 15 minutes at any given time.
That makes sense. You mentioned mom. What is the average age for the men and the women in this country anyway? Do you happen to know that?
You know, I think that's always ever changing. But I think women are at like about age 83 is the average life expectancy and men are just slightly less. At 81, right around there. And they do say that after you're over the age of 90, your life expectancy increases. And so if you make it to age 90, then you're more likely expected to make it to 100.
So at 81, you should transition.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So if you make it past the expectancy, then you're better off.
So what are the different levels of care and how does that define the type of services offered in assisted senior living facilities?
You know, the care needs are specific to each client. And that's one of the reasons why it's pretty important to work with somebody to understand what your needs are and where the best fit for you is. There are some assisted livings that cater to more independent residents, and there are others that cater to our frailer seniors that need more care. When you move into an assisted living, one of the large ones that's like a cruise ship, you have a base level of care. So room and board, which covers your apartment, it covers your meals, it covers your activities, usually the bus rides, usually housekeeping once a week and your laundry too. And then you pay an additional fee on top of that for your levels of care. So that could be as low as no level of care. You don't need anything above just help with meals and all the way up to what we call a total assist, which is the need for two people to help take care of you at all times. And so the range of care is variable depending, and obviously the price, depending on how much care you need.
Actually, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, you mentioned how it could get up as high as $25,000 to $30,000 a month for in-home care, depending on the client. What's the range for these living facilities, the senior living facilities?
An assisted living range is the base rates are depending on the size of your apartment. Again, it's like a cruise ship or a hotel where if you have the trash can view, it's cheaper than if you have the courtyard view. And so, and also if you have a studio, it's cheaper than if you have a two bedroom. So the price for the room is anywhere from, you know, $2,800 a month up to, you know, for a two bedroom, something, you know, like in the $7,000 or $8,000 a month range. And then care on top of that usually ranges from about $500 and can go all the way up to $5,000. So the range for assisted living is large, anywhere from $2,800 all the way up to $15,000.
Yeah, that is quite a range. How's that work? So how's it, someone, you get calls and you typically hear from the adult children of seniors. Is that how that typically you're approached?
Typically, yes. Typically, I hear from the powers of attorney or the adult children when, unfortunately, usually when there's a crisis and we're at a kind of a pivot point is when I typically hear from the family. But sometimes I have the senior themselves that wants to make the decision. And that's always ideal where we can go and tour places together and make the decision and then have it sort of in our back pocket when we're ready. there are pros and cons to that. And, you know, the con is that things are always changing. What could be a good facility with good staffing and good care this month could be different 6 or 8 months from now, wow, or even years from now. They could have staffing issues. They could have, you know, turnover. The building could change ownership. And so it's just kind of depends on the given time. So we have in healthcare, there's a lot of hurry up and wait. So we do a lot of hurrying up and then we wait. So I like to do some pre-planning so we know what they like, but often we're given, you know, a timeline of 72 hours to make the move. So, and that's okay too. We do it that way too.
Wow. Is there anything in place? Because I had a client once who we talked for a good 6 months plus. Her mom was already in a facility with Alzheimer's. Her dad was at home, but his dad has memory lapses and everything. And she had been trying to get him to kind of see the light that, hey, you know, it's time that we get help. And finally, he got lost driving back home and the police found him. And then he kind of saw the light and thought, okay, yeah, you're right. It's time for me to go in to a facility. So what would someone do when they have I don't blame elderly. I work with a lot of clients that say, yeah, I had to move my parents into a home and they didn't really want to go. And I'm thinking, well, I can't blame them. I wouldn't really want to go. But are there any mechanisms in place to force someone into a care facility?
That's a good question that comes up every single day. I think the mechanisms that are in place are more sort of behind the scenes planning and, you know, sort of what we can do to convince them, because obviously we can't take somebody kicking and screaming against their will into assisted living or memory care. If we do have a dementia diagnosis and we have a power of attorney in place, there are some things we can kind of force. But it is the American dream to own a home and to die in your home. I mean, that is what everybody wants. I also worked in hospice for a lot of years, and everybody said, all of our patients said they just want to die at home. You know, that's 95% of people. And so it's a tricky balancing act that we, you know, walk. And it depends. It depends on everybody's dynamic and situation and their given set of facts as to what we do. But we often, unfortunately, have to wait for some kind of event to happen. And it is much easier to transition a senior, what we say, facility to facility, so like from the hospital or a skilled nursing into assisted living rather than ripping them from their home. And so sometimes we do have to wait for something to happen that lands them in the hospital, and then we can put all the preparation we have in place into motion at that point.
You talked about there's a dimension and a power of attorney. So forgive me, I'm going to probably ask some naive questions. But to get the power of attorney, that doesn't have to be done prior to the dementia. Obviously, after the dementia, what do you require? In fact, because I've sold houses like that to where we required two doctors to diagnose. So what are the rules on that?
So there are different types of powers of attorney, too. So there's a power of attorney that when you are young or youngish and creating a trust with your attorney and you create your advanced healthcare directive. At that point, you have two options as to how you manage your power of attorney. You can have an immediate power of attorney where that person right there in that moment can make your decisions. Or you can have what we call a springing power of attorney, which is when you can no longer make your own decisions. That's when the power of attorney goes into effect. And that is the requirement of the two doctor's notes. It's very, very hard to get doctors to write those letters. So it's my advice that you, when you're creating a power of attorney, you choose the power of attorney that you trust. Choose somebody that you trust with your money right this second, with your care decisions right this second, so that you can feel confident in making them, you know, power of attorney right away. And we don't have to go through that rigmarole of getting the two doctor's notes at, you know, when we're really in a desperate situation and where our hands are tied, we have to move quickly. We have often, my husband's an attorney and he'll have people in his office say, you know, I just don't want to go into the bank and have my kid be able to take my money right now, you know, and that is possibly a concern. But if you're at the bank, you know, and you're a senior with your kid and you're on the bank account and so is the adult child, they're going to always defer to the, you know, the person that the bank account's name is in. But at least, you know, if something does happen and you're incapacitated and not able to make the decisions, we have it in place and ready to go. We're not waiting on doctor's letters. We're not waiting on a decision from a doctor to take your rights away. It's just already done. It's actually just a gift you can give to your children as a senior.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. In fact, well, I guess the damage was 10 years ago in raising, if you're afraid of your child handling your finances.
Exactly.
Ronnie, so can you expand on the costs of assisted living and any other options that are available?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, we talked about how the assisted living cost structure is set up, where you pay for the base rate of room and board. And then on top of that, you pay for your levels of care. And sometimes as you age through the assisted living process, the level of care gets cost prohibitive, right? You know, you started at $2,900 or, you know, maybe you just needed help with showers and medication management, and that was $1,000. So you're at $3,900 and that's manageable, right? You know, you have your Social Security and some savings and that's a manageable cost. And then all of a sudden you are no longer able to walk, you're in a wheelchair and you need a mechanical lift to move you and two caregivers. And that cost has gone from $3,900 up to $12,000 or $13,000. And that's just cost prohibitive. So we often see another transition from assisted living to a boarding care, which actually on paper for the state of California is the same.
Why is that relevant, that it's the same?
It's just that they have to follow the same rules and regulations as the big assisted livings do. Sometimes people think a boarding care is a house. It's a house just like yours or mine. They're in everybody's neighborhoods. They take care of six residents, and then two caregivers either live with the residents or have shifts of care. So the ratio of caregivers to residents is really good. It's three residents to one caregiver. And the cost can be kept much lower because the whole thing operates on a much smaller scale. Whereas the large assisted living, not only do they have caregivers, they have activities directors, they have kitchen staff, they have med techs, they have nurses, they have all of these different, also on top of that, they have regional teams and corporate management, where these boarding cares can operate on a smaller level. They are often cater to seniors that need a lot of care, are at the later stages of their life.
Oh, gosh.
Because the cost of a boarding care is all-inclusive. It's one flat fee. It's not these levels of care that can rise and lower.
I was going to ask you about that because I was thinking to myself, I mean, the boarding cares offer the full range of care. In other words, they can go from everything from, I guess, your hospice is when you're you're bound to a bed. Mm-hmm. But so the boarding cares have also that range of a level of care.
They do, but what a boarding care is lacking is the social activity. So we often see families make this switch, and I have conversations every day with families talking to them about where they see their loved one. Do they see them playing bingo? Do they see them doing activities, going out for bus rides or going out to the movies? Or are we really focused on the care needs? If we're really focused on the care needs and we're trying to get the best bang for our buck as it relates to care, then usually a boarding care is a better fit. So the cost for a boarding care is also variable, but can be much more affordable and is fixed, right? So we know how much a boarding care is going to cost every month, no matter if you go in there needing only help with some things, and then you end up needing help with everything. And the cost is somewhere at the lowest end, about $3,000 a month for a shared room, and could go up, you know, again to $9,000 or $10,000, but that's for 24-hour awake staff. The average cost for a private room in Orange County is somewhere between $5,000 and $7,000. So again, that's a lot less than those highest levels of care in an assisted living.
Wow. You were talking about social activities. I read this article a couple of years ago. This is, forgive my, well, whatever. Actually, that VD was hitting highs at senior facilities.
Well, they love the we, right? The, like, you mean VD as in
VD is venereal disease.
Yes, we do have a lot of... We do have a lot of sexually transmitted diseases that go around in assisted living. Yes, it is something that's not spoken about. It's actually, I wrote a paper on this in college, but it's actually a pretty serious problem because they are sexually active and the ratio of men to women is not equal. There's a lot more women than men. So one man could be infecting lots and lots of women at any assisted living facility. So
there's a joke in here somewhere, but I'm not going to tell
it. There is. I know it's, and it is, you know, absolutely. I think we have to know that our seniors are still sexually active, and a lot of adult children don't want to talk about that. And the seniors don't want to talk about it with their doctors. It's, you know, it's a healthcare problem for sure. But there was a study done years ago that if they put condoms out, would seniors use them at assisted livings? And they did. They used them, you know, all the time because they just didn't want to talk about it. They just wanted to be able to have their cars and do their thing. So yes, that is an issue. And it's an issue in memory care communities. It's an issue everywhere. So, you know, I ran a memory care community, a dementia community for 5 years. And I used to tell my caregivers, as long as it's consensual, we just need to make sure it's safe. So, you know, we have to make sure that their levels of cognitive decline are equal, not one is more cognitively declining than the other and is taking advantage of the other one, and that, you know, maybe they don't do it in the twin size bed, they have their relations in somebody's queen size bed, you know, so that there's safety, so we're not falling and breaking hips and stuff.
Wow, I've got a huge smile on my face because this is hilarious.
Yeah, it is. You know what? It doesn't, just because you're old doesn't mean that your life has to be over.
Have you had any... For example, possibly, I'm just thinking of me going to Care Facility and seeing my, well, I probably shouldn't say this, but seeing my mom there with some man. I'm like, what are you doing here? You're letting me.
Yes.
Have you had any scenarios like that or stories that were kind
Absolutely.
Of entertaining?
The hardest situation is obviously when it's a person with dementia and they still have a spouse, right? And so then the spouse is coming to visit them and they have a new girlfriend. So that is, you know, sad and hard. And it's just something we have to educate the family on. It's actually great. It's great to have the romance in assisted living because it gives them a new social outlook. You know, a lot of times people are moving to assisted living because the majority of their friend base has passed, right? Has died or moved on or moved to where their kids are or whatever. They don't have a friend base. And so you create this, it's literally like a dorm dynamic, right? Like a college dorm
right.
dynamic where everybody's it's living together and, you know, they can have fun together too. And it's safe and nobody's driving. So we also have, you know, parties with alcohol in people's apartments, you know, that same kind of idea, and just got to keep it as safe as possible within limits. But resident seniors have rights in assisted living. It's not a prison, you know, so they can do what they want and have relationships as long as it's safe and it's consensual, of course.
And 62 years old or older is typical age.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
So are there any, what other factors or challenges should one consider when choosing an assisted living facility? How's that work?
Again, it's just kind of dependent on
income.
Income. Yeah, sure. Income. Dependent on where their doctors are, where the hospital is they like to go. I work with a lot of St. Jude patients out of St. Jude and Fullerton. And I often talk about, do you need to stay in the St. Jude bubble? Which means if 911 is called, are you really wanting to be at St. Jude Hospital? Or are you okay going to St. Joe's? Are you okay going to PIH in Whittier? You know, if you insist on staying in the St. Jude bubble, you can only go about as far as your Belinda and, you know, in the other direction, La Habra. You kind of get into La Mirada or you get into Anaheim Hills and you're destined to go to another hospital. So if that's important, we talk about that. If your friends are at a place, we talk about that. You know, maybe you go to a place where a bunch of your friends are. It just kind of depends on each person's dynamic. Now, let's say you have a care need that's sort of out of the ordinary. Like you have a feeding tube or you have insulin injections, that could also limit your options too.
Tell me this. So if Warren Buffett moved to California and he wanted a care facility in Orange County with an ocean view, what is the best? Is there a care facility that's considered the best?
There are, you know, just because it has an ocean view doesn't mean it's considered the best. So you have to sort of, there's a lot of factors when considering what is the best, but there are some ocean view communities. There's Vivante in Newport Beach, and there's the Bluffs, which is in kind of the Dana Point area. We in North Orange County have Morningside or Capriana. Those are all buy-in communities. So that's a whole different ball game when it comes to assisted living. They're called continuing care retirement communities. So that's where you buy in and you actually kind of technically own, quote unquote, your condo or your apartment, and the buy-in can be anywhere from like $200,000 or $300,000 up to $1.5 million, again depending on the size of the apartment. And then the sort of mentality of a continuing care retirement community is that you get to age in place and stay where you are and move through the levels of care, and they are obligated to take care of you through end of life, even if you were to run out of money. Of course, then they'll tap into that money, that deposit. And then when you do move out and they resell your apartment, your estate gets a certain percentage of that money, that initial down payment back. And so that's, you know, they all, and each one of those places has different requirements. Some of them you have to be under the age of 90. Some of them you have to move in and be completely independent. And you have to pass assessments. We're seeing those have become very popular with very long waiting lists since COVID. And I think that's probably a lot to do with the housing market, right? These seniors are making a lot of money on selling their houses right now. So they are wanting to sell, right? And also they hated being alone and isolated during the COVID years. And so they're also like, if that happens again, I don't want to be in this situation. I want to be in a place where I have community. So we're seeing those independent living, continuing care retirement communities have very long wait lists right now.
Are there a lot being built?
You know, they're not. They're not built as frequently as just a regular assisted living. I'm sure everybody's seen that we have a lot of assisted livings being popping up everywhere, new builds. But the CCRCs are rarer because not a lot of people can afford that, right, or want to afford that. That takes some foresight, some thinking in advance that, hey, I'm ready to move to assisted living or ready to move to a senior community when I don't need it. So assisted living is real need-based, whereas the continuing care retirement community is more forward-thinking of seniors that are thinking in advance. And a lot of people do that when they don't have children. They don't have anybody to help support when, you know, they really need the help when the sort of bad thing happens that insists right. We go to assisted living. In Northern California, there's a LGBTQ community that's a continuing care retirement community because we are seeing those seniors, they didn't have kids.
They don't use as much condoms or do...
Yeah, I guess not. Maybe not maybe as often can... needed. We do see them in a different sort of category maybe of needing more care and wanting to be a part of their community too. So we are seeing some different types of communities. We have in LA, there's a Japanese community that's for all Japanese folks. That is a continuing care retirement community. We have the Eastern Star buildings. Those are for the Masons and the Eastern Star. So we do see some diversity in kind of being with your own group of people, too.
Mm, interesting. In that. And all right, let's wrap this up with about some logistics, Ronnie. How can I ensure that my loved one receives quality care in assisted living facility?
There are many ways to do that, but it's all really about getting to know the community. I don't like the F word, facility, the community that your loved one is in and the staff that are working there. This industry is all about humans taking care of humans. And so there are people that don't get along, personality conflicts. And so just visiting, being there often.
I learned something. I had no idea that the F word was facility. I thought it was something else.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, different things, different F words for different things. But in this situation, we don't use the F word. It's a community. So we go often, visit at different times of the day, get to know the staff. I mean, pizza for the staff goes a long, long way. You know, these caregivers are making minimum wage and doing a really hard job, a job I wouldn't want to do, right? And most people don't want to do, change yes. adult diapers, right? It's terrible. So, you know, appreciate them, understand that they're human and that there could be conflicts. And if you have problems, take it to the management, take it to, you know, the manager of the specific assisted living that you're in, the nurse usually, or there are administrators, the executive director, you can talk to them. And then if the problem exceeds what they can help you with, then there is an ombudsman. And the ombudsman is
say that again.
It's an ombudsman, and there's a phone number in every assisted living, skilled nursing, anywhere. There should be a poster with an 800 phone number, a big poster, and has a 1-800 phone number. And that is a person whose job is to advocate for seniors in the community setting. So you can also call that person and they can launch an investigation. They either work for the Department of Social Services or are volunteers. Often they're retired folks from this industry that worked in the industry a long time, and they go and kind of hash out problems and see if there's real legitimacy to big concerns or if it can be worked out and, you know, everybody can kind of kumbaya and get along.
Now, how are medical emergencies handled at senior communities?
911, just like you would at home. So I think we use 911 a lot. The fire department is usually really acquainted with their local assisted livings and vice versa. It's great fun for the seniors. They love to see the cute firefighters come on
goodness.
In. It's a part of the activity. The social dynamic of an assisted living is 911 and the fire department coming in.
Is it kind of a given that there's quite a few false alarms?
There are false alarms. There are a lot of problems. I mean, the biggest problem we have in assisted living are falls, right? Seniors fall. We can't prevent all falls. We do the best we can to mitigate them, but a senior has the right to fall. And if they're trying to do something that they really can't, or there could just be an accident, an area rug, or, you know, a trip up of something on the ground. So falls happen every single day in an assisted, large assisted living. And so the paramedics are there on a daily basis. They call 911, then the paramedics would assess the situation and either take them to a local hospital if that's necessary, or, you know, just kind of write up a report that this, the fall, there was no injury related to the fall. The only alternative to having the paramedics come is if you're on hospice. If you're on hospice, then we call hospice and they come out and do a visit.
Now, how does this get paid for? Are there insurances? Are there state? Is there help from the state? How does that work? Can you touch on that?
That's probably every family's biggest question. Everybody thinks Medicare pays for it, but it doesn't. So we have a couple options. A lot of it's private pay. You know, a lot of it, for the most part, is just families that have, this is what you work for. This is what you save money for when you, you know, are a senior and you need care. This is why you own a home, so you can sell it to pay for this care. But there are some other ways to pay for it. One is long-term care insurance. Not everybody has that. In fact, not even 75% of people have that. It's pretty rare. But if you have that, that does cover assisted living most of the time. It also can cover in-home care. Each policy is a little different, so we'd have to read the policy and see what your policy covers. There's also a veterans benefit for assisted living. It's called aid in attendance. And so if you, or you are the surviving spouse or the veteran, served at least one day during wartime, you're allowed a stipend for assisted living. And it's anywhere from, you know, about $1,600 a month and can go up to, you know, $2,500, $3,000 for a couple. So kind of there's a lot of variables there, but that's something that if you are a veteran can help offset the costs. And then the only other way to pay for assisted living, or for senior care, I should say, is through Medi-Cal, which is in California, Medi-Cal, and the rest of the country, Medicaid. And that's our low-income insurance. And that's for everybody, whether you're a baby or a senior. But as a nation, when we were creating Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, we decided that we didn't want our seniors to be homeless. And so there is a benefit within that health insurance, the only health insurance with a benefit for long-term care. And that is just for our low-income seniors, so that basically we won't have any homeless seniors on our street. We have an option to house them and to take care of them. And that's just a...
What would one do?
To apply for Medi-Cal?
Yeah.
So you have to meet the requirements, and those have changed kind of recently. They used to be really stringent. They used to be you have to have less than $2,000 to your name and less than about $1,300 a month in income. And now that's changed to up to, in California, up to $150,000 in assets. Plus, you can own one home and one car, and then your income is variable. There could be a share of costs where Medi-Cal pays for a certain percentage, and then the client or the senior themselves is responsible for a share of costs, sort of like a copay. But the thing with the Medi-Cal is you have to go to a community that's licensed for Medi-Cal. Usually those are skilled nursing facilities, the kind of hospital-like setting, mainly because when the benefit was created, back when all those benefits were created, we only had that. We didn't have assisted living. We only had skilled nursing. So what's written into the benefit is skilled nursing. We have a program here in California that's called the Assisted Living Waiver Program for people that qualify for Medi-Cal and really don't need skilled nursing, don't need a skilled nurse. They just need help with care. That's mostly done in that boarding care setting. We do have some assisted livings that also accept it, but mostly at the boarding care level, the house. And that has a waiting list. So if we think that maybe we need to go down the Medi-Cal road, that is going to require a lot more pre-planning than the private pay path, because Medi-Cal waiver program, the assisted living waiver program through Medi-Cal, they have a waiting list of 1 to 2 years right now to get into an assisted living,
wow,
into a board and care. Yeah.
Well, it's almost time to start thinking about
for
that
yourself,
earlier.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thanks for that. That was, I'll be 90 next week.
Next
I look pretty
week,
good, though, don't I?
So if that's something that you're like, oh, I'm thinking Medi-Cal, I don't have the money for this, I'm thinking Medi-Cal might be the way to go, then we should start pre-planning for that, you know, with a couple years of notice of need of care.
Wow. Well, this has just been incredible, Ronnie. I appreciate it so much. I'm sure the listeners got a lot out of this. This is a topic of almost every family that I'm aware of. So I appreciate you and thank you so much for joining me today. How can our listeners contact you or find you? In fact, it's funny, before we were talking before the show started, and I said, how's business? She said, oh, I'm too busy. So I don't know if she's going to want to give this information out.
No, absolutely. Call me. I'm here to help my community. I don't have a website. I don't have social media, but you can just call my cell phone number, 714-458-7300. I answer it. I help people that need Medi-Cal, and I don't make any money on that, but I also help people find placement. My services are free to the family, and then the community that they move into pays me a referral fee once they've lived there for a period of time. So just call me with your senior questions and I'll help guide you in the right direction.
Wow, that's fantastic. Well, thank you again, friends, for tuning into the Age with Grace episode. Remember that each person's situation is unique and there's no one size fits all solution to assisted senior living. We recommend that you consult with a qualified advisor to determine the best plan of action for your specific goals and preference. Signing off. Thank you again for joining. Have a great week.
Thanks for tuning into the Jones Zone, your resource for building wealth and knowledge in everything real estate. If you found this information and insights shared in today's episode valuable, be sure to head over to iTunes to rate the show, leave a review, and subscribe so that you don't miss another episode. Remember, when it comes to real estate, knowledge is power. Stay informed and stay ahead of the game with us. I'll be back next week with even more expert advice and industry insights. Don't miss it. Thank you.